So thank you for being here and for being here together. I just think for a moment, it might be really sweet and joyful. At least it is for me to take a moment and think about 143 people right now from much of the world, or at least the parts of the world where it's a reasonable time of day to be online. And just that sense of connection, there's all of these people around the world that want to spend our time in this way, that we want to cultivate our hearts and minds in this way. And this is really joyful to me. It brings me joy and hope. So thank you. So my name is Jessica Mori. Sometimes people call me J-Mo. That's often my Dharma name. And I'm calling in from Concord, Massachusetts, which is near Boston, and it's the land of this land was stewarded and cared for by the Massachusetts tribes people for many, many generations before colonialists arrived. And I'm really happy to practice with you today. I'd like to start with just a short, simple practice together, and then talk a bit about joy, and then do a longer practice based on the discussion on joy. So I will invite you wherever you are to take a few deeper breaths. Let yourself settle in and really let yourself feel the exhale. You might sigh out on your exhale. And let your attention just follow that exhale towards letting go. So, with each breath, softening your body, letting your body be heavy. Feeling the contact of your body with a chair, cushion, the floor underneath you. And through that connection, feeling the earth underneath us, holding us close in her way. And for this just simple opening practice, feel if you can just soften. Nothing to really to do. If the mind wants something to do, you might just find something in your present moment experience that is pleasant. Maybe there's something pleasant, a sensation in your body, a sound, a sight near you that's pleasant. And let the attention just rest in this pleasant quality. You might even find that just the sense of being present has a subtle pleasure or joy in it. This is what Bhante Anolio calls the subtle joy of the present moment. Can just be a relief, a refuge. Just to let everything else go, everything that you are doing to arrive here. And let yourself just be with a breath, with a sound, with a sensation in your body. If your mind wanders into a difficult thought or emotion, you can just notice, can you bring presence to that? And can you find that subtle joy of being present even with uncomfortable sensations, thoughts, feelings? Sometimes we can feel that kind of freedom when we pop out of identification. And you might just escort your attention back to a simple, pleasant, present moment experience. Just taking another moment to ground, to savor whatever feels good or okay in this moment. To invite yourself to really arrive. To enjoy being here fully. Give yourself this gift. If your eyes have been closed, you can open them. You might take a moment to sort of orient to the space around you, to the screen. The 172 Sangha members here with us. Again, welcome, everyone. I love also that people are sharing the weather where you are. I appreciate that. It's a little partly cloudy here in Massachusetts, midday afternoon. Sunny afternoon. So I wanted to switch kind of the way that the space is often held as the longer practice and then the talk. I wanted to offer the talk first as the foundation for then what we'll do in the practice. So what I'd like to talk about today is joy, as was mentioned. And I want to talk about this because for me and my practice, like many of us, my mind will tend to go to what's not working, right? Or what's unpleasant, what's difficult. This can be a common human experience. And also I tend to have a more aversive mind. So my mind in particular is very attentive to what's wrong or what could be fixed or what's problematic or what I don't like in any given moment. And so because of that tendency, I spent a lot of my early practice. I mostly practice within the insight tradition and very specifically the Mahasi noting, meditation noting technique where you note experience moment by moment. And so I spent a lot of time noting aversion, 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 unpleasant, aversion. And I could get quite good at it. I mean, the benefit of that was that there was some comfort with discomfort, basically. So it is a powerful and beautiful practice to be able to be with what's challenging in a non-reactive way. This is a very important practice. And I remember this moment, it was like now maybe 15 years ago, which was at that point already almost 15 years into some pretty serious practice for me. One of my mentors, I was sort of describing what was happening. He suddenly brought up, he's like, you know, there is this thing called right effort. Right effort in the Eightfold Noble Path that comes right before right mindfulness. So if we think about the Eightfold Noble Path as it has a certain quality of linearity to it, step by step, we follow each of the steps in the path. Right effort comes right before right mindfulness. And right effort is the practice of cultivating the positive mind states, increasing positive mind states that have arisen, cultivating positive mind states that have not yet arisen, and then decreasing negative mind states, right? So that is what right effort is to bring in the positive and decrease the negative mind states. And so if one thought about this in a linear fashion, we would do that. We would cultivate positive mind states, decrease negative mind states before, it's the step before going into mindfulness of just paying attention to things as they are. And I remember he telling me that, and it was just like, blew my mind. It was the sudden moment where I was like, wait, like I could actually choose to shift my attention to what's pleasant or positive, to joy, instead of just hanging out in the aversion most of the time. And that was true in my meditation practice and then also my daily life. So that was really a breakthrough moment for me. And it gave me more, I'd say basically permission, a sense of permission to cultivate positive mind states in a more active way. I'd certainly done a lot of loving kindness at that point and had done, you know, and had the benefit of positive mind states through practice, but to actually choose to cultivate them. So that's sort of a first moment of insight around this within the Dharma, that this is an active part of the Dharma. And then since then, I've been really tracking the ways in which these positive qualities and even just like pleasant qualities are talked about in the suttas by the Buddha and taught about by the Buddha. And even the sense of there's a way that practice itself is a movement as we over the long term. So this isn't like a day by day movement, but over years, we start to see that we actually move towards more regular positive mind states, that this is an outcome and a benefit of our practice. And that has certainly been very true for me in my mind and in my practice. I started practicing as a teenager, I was 14. So it is hard to judge whether that would have happened by itself, but my mind is definitely more pleasant and joyful and happy. And it's just a more pleasant experience to be in my own mind and body by far these days than it was in my early practice. So it's certainly been part of my experience. And then as I've dived deeper into sutta study, to the study of the early Pali texts, you start to see, as you look there, all of these ways in which the Buddha was teaching happiness and joy, like everywhere, and all of the important teachings of the Buddha. And I think sometimes Buddhism gets a kind of bad rap because of the Four Noble Truths, that that's really simplified as like the Buddha taught that life is suffering and that's just how it is or something. But of course, that's like just the first noble truth, is the sense of like, there is suffering, or there, things can be unreliable or stressful. And then the next ones are like, and there's a reason for that. Second. And the third noble truth is, and it doesn't have to be that way, basically. There's this thing that we call Nibbana, and you know, which is non-suffering. And then there's a way that we can get there, the fourth noble truth. So in some ways you could think about this whole path and practice is about about non-suffering. It is. Buddha taught suffering, the end of suffering. So it's about this non-suffering quality. And if you think of like, what is the alternative to non-suffering? It's happiness, joy, contentment, peace, all of these beautiful qualities of mind. That is where we are aiming our intention and practice. So I want to talk really specifically about these qualities of joy. And one other thing that I've started to notice as I study the suttas is that there are so many words for happiness and joy, so many Pali terms that are used within the suttas, and like different kind of subtleties or qualities of happiness or joy are talked about within the suttas. So I wanted to just offer a few of those here. And so one that many of us may know about is mudita, the quality of often translated as sympathetic joy. So mudita is the quality of heart, mind, that rejoices in the happiness and goodness and success and wisdom of others. So it's often translated that way. So mudita, rejoicing in the happiness and goodness of others. But it certainly is also a quality, to my mind, of rejoicing and celebrating and taking joy in our own good qualities and successes and happiness and wisdom. And also just in delighting or taking joy in what's beautiful and good in the world. So that's this quality of mudita, that's often kind of the most commonly known kind of joy from the suttas in Buddhism, because it's one of the four Brahma Viharas, the four qualities of the awakened mind: loving kindness, compassion, mudita or sympathetic joy, and equanimity. So you might have heard that term before, even practiced, and that's what we'll practice today, is the mudita practice. There are these other forms that I wanted to talk a little bit about, just to give you a sense of like, there's a lot of discussion and teaching about joy and happiness. So one of them is pamoja, which is a term that's translated as gladness, delight, joy, and happiness. And if you're familiar with the early Buddhist texts, there's a lot of lists. There's many, many lists. And there's also a lot of, there's a lot of lists of like things that go together. There's also a lot of lists that are like, this thing leads to this thing, leads to this thing, leads to this thing. Like, so these like dependent lists of qualities or mind states or skills. And so pamoja is often one of the first, and so there's many lists that include multiple different kinds of happiness and joy. That like this kind of joy leads to this other kind of joy, leads to this other kind of joy. Okay, so there's multiple places where this happens in the teachings. Pamoja is often the earlier is like kind of earlier in the list. And it's often translated as a sense of gladness. And one way that it is talked about in the early list is it's like the first happiness that comes from like virtuous action is often the first thing. So virtuous action leads to this kind of gladness, or generosity leads to this kind of gladness, or faith and trust in the practice, in our own practice, in our own capacities. Faith or trust leads to this kind of gladness. And, you know, just a simple reflection, you just take a moment to reflect. It's like sometimes people call it the bliss of blamelessness. So Pomoja is not often considered bliss. There's another term that's more related to bliss, but it's really just like the happiness of blamelessness, of non-regret, the happiness of non-regret, that like you can go to sleep at the end of the day and your mind's not racing about the thing you said, the lie you made, the action you took, that you might start to regret. And I feel like probably a lot of us can relate to those times when we have nothing to regret, and how the just ease and gladness that comes out of that. So that's the first that I want to talk about, Pomoja. And in these lists of, this leads to this, leads to this, often after Pomoja, the next step is Piti, P-I-T-I. That's how we write it and transliterate it in English. So Piti is often translated as joy or rapture, bliss, enthusiasm, happiness, joyful interest. So this quality is the one that's more often associated with like what we might call bliss. I'm seeing people say that I'm frozen. Are others fine for you? Okay. All right. So I'll keep going and oh, great. Okay. So Piti is the quality that, like, as I was saying, is often translated or associated with bliss, or and often translated as rapture. And that's because Piti has a very energetic quality to it. So it's like that. I think people can experience it in many different ways, but one way that I experience it is like the kind of like bubbly, energetic sensation in the body that we experience when we're happy. And Piti also is often associated with concentration. So also within deep concentration, the jhana states, there's a lot of reference to Piti, this kind of blissful, pleasant joy. There's a lot of pointing to sukha, happiness, to contentment. So concentration, those qualities lead to concentration. They support concentration. They come out of concentration. So Piti is the more like uplifted, energetic happiness that we might feel. And when we're working with it, and so you might have had this experience when your mind is really concentrated, there's just a natural thing with, seems like within human minds and bodies, that a concentrated mind leads to this kind of like pleasant sensation in the body, you know, even blissful, which is, can be challenging at times because we can get like attached to that pleasant feeling. But it is the natural outcome of getting concentrated, is to have this PT experience in the body. And then PT, the next in the factor. So PT is often, this is Pomoja, often first, then PT, and then PT often shifts into Sukha in the next phase of kind of the development of the mind, body, heart. Sukha, we transliterated as S-U-K-H-A. And Sukha actually has, my understanding, the same etymological root as sugar, because Sanskrit and Sanskrit Pali English actually have, Indo-European languages have a lot of places have similar roots. So sukha, sugar, sweetness, this quality of sweetness is embedded within the quality of sukha, happiness. Someone asked, how do you spell the first one? I'll just answer that. Pamoja, P-A-M-O-J-J-A, Pamoja is how the first one is spelled. And so with sukha is also translated as pleasure, ease, satisfaction, happiness. And my understanding and experience of sukha is it's like piti. So piti is like kind of first, and it's that like energetic, pleasant quality of happiness. And then it kind of like settles or relaxes into sukha. So sukha has less of the energetic quality and but retains the happiness. So it might be like a little bit calmer happiness. And a little bit what's coming to mind right now as a metaphor or something is like, you think about like relationship when you're in love with someone. Piti to me is that like the early days when you're just like all of that like bubbly, joyful, energetic love of someone. And then I just like imagining how relationship, like committed, loving relationship over time can settle into this like deep, settled sweetness, that kind of love, that kind of happiness is like the sukha happiness. So that's the third quality of happiness. And as I said, with concentration will shift into sukha as we get deeper. And if you follow the jhanas, the four jhanas, the deep states of concentration, goes from piti to sukha and on from there. And sukha is often everywhere that I've seen instruction on deep concentration, piti and sukha are part of the kind of required qualities of concentration. And so that was another huge insight for me in my practice was I used to think I had to concentrate by this tight efforting, you know, like just pushing through, driving hard, like this, like that was concentration for me. And learning that happiness, sukha, piti are like lead to concentration, are the factors that sustain and support concentration was so helpful. Because then it was like, the concentrated mind is supported by happiness, by a kind of sweet happiness. So it just can be a little tip to look out for in your own practice. Like if you notice yourself like, okay, I'm trying to concentrate on the breath and like the mind and body are getting tight, like, okay, wait, the teaching is that happiness supports concentration. So how could I shift the way that I'm practicing or attending to bring in more happiness in this moment, more sukha, more piti, that will then actually, it's like the mind, because if you think about it, the mind wants to go, there's a way that it wants to go towards what's pleasant and happy. So if there's like, just, you know, you let it, and the more happiness there is, the mind will want to go there. You know, it's like positive dog training. I don't have a dog, but my understanding these days is like, that's how you're supposed to do it. It's like all positive reinforcement. And we are exactly the same. Our minds are just like that. So how can we develop concentration or all of these qualities in practice through positive reinforcement by attending to the joy and the happiness and the sweetness? So those are the qualities that I wanted to talk about. There's also tranquility, which, you know, I wouldn't necessarily put it in the in the joy category, but it has such a easeful, pleasant quality. So I talked about how joy, PT, rapture are connected to, and sukha are connected to concentration development. They're part of right effort, which is on the Eightfold Noble Path that leads to right mindfulness, to right concentration. And then they're also in a few other suttas. I think I want to mention one in particular. This is the sutta on transcendent dependent origination. And one thing I want to say, I wrote a little bit about this that's on Sangha Live. So there's some references and links in there that you can refer to on the blog. So there's a text called the Transcendent Dependent Origination. And you might have heard, if you've been practicing and studying Buddhism, about dependent origination, this the series of events that leads basically to suffering. The Buddha laid out, like, it's one of those, this, and this is a circle of, like, here's how we get caught and just keep going in cycles of suffering. That's dependent origination. Transcendent dependent origination teaching is, okay, there's that path that goes to, like, pain and suffering, but there's actually, like, a path off. We can step off that one and then circle into freedom, into awakening and freedom, liberation. And that's what transcendent dependent origination is. It's like, okay, we step off the path of the circle and cycle of suffering into a cycle that leads towards liberation. So I wanted to just tell you step by step those ones. It's a kind of way to inspire faith in your practice. And then you might want to study it a little bit more deeply. So for transcendent dependent origination, it starts at suffering, where dependent origination kind of finishes. It's a circle, so who knows where it begins and ends. But, you know, there's a step of suffering and dependent origination. We end up at this, like, painful place from our conditioned habits. And when we have the benefit of insight or teaching or practice, we can use that suffering as a to lead us into faith, which is a faith about practicing. So basically we use that suffering to start practicing, to look deeper. So instead of using that suffering to, like, run away and keep going into kind of painful, deluded behaviors, we use that suffering as, like, ooh, this is true. Like, this is painful. I've ended up here again. And we step off that ride into, like, well, maybe I should try something else. Maybe I should try a wisdom practice, like the practices that, you know, we learn about and practice within Buddhism is one path we might take. So we step into faith. And then faith is the supporting condition for pamoja, that gladness, the quality of gladness. So faith, and we practice, and then we feel the gladness. Gladness is a supporting condition for piti, that rapture or energetic happiness. Piti or energetic happiness is the supporting condition for tranquility. So it's the calming factor. Tranquility is the supporting condition for sukha, for the happiness. Sukha is the supporting condition for concentration. So I was just talking about. Concentration is a supporting condition for the knowledge and vision of things as they really are. So we know that the mind needs to be concentrated to really see clearly what's happening. The knowledge and vision of things as they really are the supporting condition for disenchantment. Disenchantment is a supporting condition for dispassion. And dispassion is a supporting condition for, this is translated as emancipation or liberation, and liberation is the supporting condition for the knowledge of the destruction of the fetters. So basically, it's a step-by-step guide to like, this is how we end up in freedom and liberation. And along the way, we have all of these forms of joy and happiness. So it feels like really important to frame that as a central aspect of this teaching and this practice, as a benefit and an outcome of the practice, and also as a road sign of the practice. Okay, we're moving along. There's more gladness. There's more tranquility in the mind. There's more happiness in the mind. There's more piti in the mind and body. And there's more mudita, joy, happiness of others. The more happy, content I feel, way easier to feel really happy for other people's happiness when that joy and cultivation and happiness is being cultivated in me, in this mind. So these are central to the teachings of the Buddha and to this path and practice. And let me see if there's anything else I want to say about all this for now. Yeah, I think just as a practice, it can be really important to start tracking your own mind and looking for what cultivates, what leads to happiness, what leads to joy, what cultivates that for you in your life. You know, some pointers of that the Buddha taught, like virtuous behavior. Kind behavior leads to happiness. Faith or trust or confidence leads to happiness. Generosity. For me, ones that feel really important that lead to my happiness and joy is space. There's a person with sacred idleness. Just like downtime and space leads to my happiness. Paying attention and lingering on what's beautiful and joyful in the world can lead to happiness. And making it a practice, a tendency to celebrate, to give attention to what's good, to appreciate, to notice the pleasant. And there's an author who I give a reference to on that blog, Ross Gay, who's a poet. He has a book called Book of Delights. It's a beautiful book. If you haven't discovered him yet, you might want to check him out. And he basically made a practice of, for 365 days, just writing every day about a delight from that day. So making it, and he called it a discipline, a rigor and a discipline to notice what was delightful. And I have a friend, a young friend, who was a long time teen retreatant and now like just friend and mentee. We were talking the other day, she loves Ross Gay, I love Ross Gay. And so she had actually developed a practice with a friend where they text every day three delights. So you might have heard like I've heard a lot of people do the practice of texting each other gratitudes every day. Like at the end of the day, you send three gratitudes. And this feels like it has a similar flavor, but it's slightly different, that you text each other three delights. And so she was talking about it. She's like, with the benefit that she started to see in her life is she knew she would have to text this friend at the end of the day. So she had to be paying attention during the day to what was delighting her and actually kind of write it down so she'd be ready to send it. And so she invited me to start sending her my delights as well, which I did. And just in this moment, again, what I noticed is yesterday, I was just cranky. I was cranky last night at the end of the day for a number of reasons. I was tired. I don't know. The mind was cranky. And I could see as I got home and was sitting with my husband and chatting, and I could watch my mind's tendency. I wanted to just dwell on like what was hard about the day. I really wanted to maybe even just talk about it. And then I took a moment. I was like, because of this practice of delight, stopped and like reflected on the day. And there were so many delightful moments for me yesterday. So many delightful moments. So then I, I just like let my mind linger on a few of them. And it was just like, yeah, this is a much better way to spend my attention. And also it leads to a much more generative quality of mind in terms of my connection with my husband and how I kind of showed up or behaved for the rest of the day. So, so we'll just share my delight. One of the delights, this really big delight yesterday, I was hanging out with a friend. I find children and nature are two of the easiest ways for me to connect with delight. And so I got to spend time with my friend's children. And because of COVID, it's, you know, there's been a lot of distance. I haven't had time to be with them, and I've been able to be with them. And the delight was just his son, Kavi. He just wanted to run with me. So we just like, we were like running, like back and forth, like out, we were going kind of on a walk, and just the like total happiness that brought him for us to run together. And then it brought me a lot of happiness. And then he just wanted to hold my hand as we were walking after that. And that was so delightful. And then his mother sent me a picture from behind of us holding hands. And it's delightful. Yesterday was delightful. You know, it's another way of looking at the day, even though I had these moments of feeling cranky and thinking about what was not working. So I would love to shift over to a practice, and then we'll have some time for Q&A and sharing, and maybe someone will want to get on and talk. Okay, so I will invite you to settle into a meditation posture that works for you. Again, you might take a few deeper breaths. And breathing as we begin practice in a way that will support ease and well-being in your body, that will support tranquility and ease. Maybe there's even a way that you can breathe right now that is pleasant. Or you can find the pleasure of taking a breath. Maybe for you, you can just settle into your body and feel contact with the chair or the ground. It might be a simple pleasure of just feeling that contact, the groundedness. And then I invite us to begin this practice of joy, cultivating joy, by first taking some moments to reflect on your life. Maybe even right now, like in this moment, what is joyful in this moment? What is okay? If you need to, you can also just open your eyes and ground. There might be something that you love in the space around you, or maybe you can see outside to something beautiful. Maybe you feel it in your body. Just noticing, is there anything joyful or pleasant or that you can appreciate or celebrate in this moment? I love And Thich Nhat Hanh teaches the happiness of the non-toothache. So maybe you don't have a toothache right now. And you could just take a little joy in that. The joy of what's not wrong right now. Just see, you don't have to over effort, just see. And then if you can reflect on your week, perhaps the past week, tuning your attention to what's good in your life, what's joyful or you can celebrate or appreciate. And set that intention and then reflecting on your day or your week. What's going okay or even well in your life? What might you be grateful for? Or maybe even delight in? And if you find a memory or an experience, let yourself kind of linger on this delight or this gratitude. You might even imagine that you're breathing it in. You're like soaking up the delight, happiness, the joy into your body, into your cells. And feeling if you can stay connected with your body. And notice what it feels like to remember delightful moments. Remember the joy in your life. And to be grateful. Now, I invite us to shift into the mudita practice, the sympathetic joy. And so similar to all of the Brahma Viharas, the divine abodes, the sense is that we connect with our own joy and then that overflows. And so from this place of connection to what's good in our own lives, I invite you to bring to mind someone in your life who's happy or experiencing some success or good fortune, or just maybe someone who really has a lot of goodness. And choosing this person, this happy person, someone who's, it's very easy for you to feel happy for their happiness. So it might be a child, it might be a pet, you know, pet running somewhere, thinking of a being who is happy, or a moment when they're happy that makes you happy. And so you bring this to mind, this moment of their happiness, maybe an image or a felt sense. And I'll share a few of the phrases that you might choose from. So you can just feel the happiness, the joy of their joy. And if it helps you to use a word or phrases, you might repeat to yourself, may your happiness and good fortune continue. May your happiness and good fortune continue. May you enjoy happiness and abundance. May you enjoy happiness and abundance. I delight in your happiness and success. I delight in your happiness and success. I'm happy that you're happy. I'm happy that you're happy. May your happiness increase, and may it lead to true freedom from all suffering. May your happiness increase, and may it lead to true freedom from all suffering. It's choosing a phrase, a word that connects you with this mudita, the joy at this being's happiness. You're welcome to stay with this one being, or if you'd like to shift to a benefactor. So this is someone in your life who has been really kind or generous or helpful. So bring to mind a benefactor. And then reflecting on their goodness, their happiness or good qualities. Connecting with that and celebrating. I'm happy for your happiness. May your wisdom and goodness ever increase. May your good fortune never end. May it lead to full liberation. So we keep an image or a felt sense of this benefactor, a moment of their happiness or wisdom. We feel this joyful intention in our minds. So the object of attention is really the just joyful response to their happiness and goodness. And again, you can stay with this person or being, or if you like, you can shift to a neutral person. So this is someone that you don't know very well, but someone that you might kind of see in your life. You don't have particularly positive or negative feelings about them. Give me a moment to find a neutral person in your life. A neighbor maybe you don't know well, or host person. And then reflecting on the happiness or good qualities of this person. So you might not know them specifically, but you might know that all of us have beautiful qualities in some way. All of us have joys and sorrows in our lives. Or you might have to just imagine a bit, but allowing yourself to imagine the good fortune or the happiness, the goodness of this person. So connecting with their happiness, their goodness, their success. And letting yourself celebrate, delight in their happiness. May your happiness ever grow. May your wisdom and goodness, your good qualities, ever increase. May your good fortune never end. I'm happy that you're happy. I'm happy that you're happy. So attending to just this, delighting the happiness and another's happiness. The image or feeling of this person being happy, successful. And then to close this practice, opening your attention as wide as it wants to go, to include more beings. And letting your mind seek out the goodness, the success, the happiness, the good fortune, and the people in your community, your country. Where's the goodness? Where's the happiness? In your mind, seek that and then celebrate. Land on the goodness, the happiness, the success. May this happiness ever grow and lead to full liberation. I'm happy for your goodness and your happiness. You can often see the challenges in the world, what's going wrong. Just take a moment to recognize all the beings who are taking positive actions, who are caring, who are trying to improve the situations. All of the moments of love and generosity that are occurring all over the world. And celebrating, taking joy and happiness in that recognition. May your goodness and happiness and good fortune ever grow, ever increase. And may it lead to full liberation. And then letting the images and the words settle. Letting your attention rest in your body. And if your eyes Open, close. When you're ready, you can open your eyes. Let's take a moment to look around. Feel your body orient to where you are. Thank you all for your practice and also for some of the questions that are already in the chat. And as Kara, who's under the name of Sangha Live, has mentioned that you can write a question in the ask question. And you're also really welcome to come on live if you want to, which I'd love to name. So one thing I'm going to do here is I'm going to put in the chat the appreciative joy phrases. It's going to be a lot. Here comes. That's too long. I can't send them all to you. Here, let me see what I can do. There you go. So this practice is called mudita. And those are some of the phrases you might want to work with if you want to see them. And I imagine some of y'all are not, seems like some people might not be native English speakers, so that might be helpful. And I'll just answer before I go to the questions. Sharon, you asked, can you be happy for someone and still experience envy? Or experiencing envy means it's not really mudita. It's a great question. I mean, and this could get down to some deep philosophical questions about like mind moments. My experience is probably like it might all be, the mind might be alternating between envy and mudita, but you might have to really check that. So I can imagine there are people in my life who there are moments when I'm really just truly happy for them. And then the next moment I might feel some jealousy or envy, you know? So they're definitely different qualities of mind. And for me, my experience is that I'm shifting between them. That's not, so if I'm feeling jealousy or envy, I'm not feeling mudita in that moment. So, yeah. Okay. Let's see. So now looking at the questions and answers. I get so much joy from being in nature, but it doesn't last very long. My mind goes quickly to how fast we are losing it. Yes. How can I maintain that sense of joy longer, or at least not dwell on the negative so much? Sharon, I'm really with you in terms of the pain that I feel in nature sometimes. Like, it feels like I'm also... For me, climate change is becoming more clear and present year by year, moment, day by day. So this really is, that's why I call it a discipline in my description for this class and then in the write-up, the blog, that joy is a discipline. You know, just like being present is a discipline. Like we actually make the commitment and intend our minds towards what's beautiful, what's joyful, and we let the attention rest there. And then we'll notice, just like when we try to attend to the breath, bring our attention to the breath, it falls away, bring our attention to the breath, it falls away. It's a practice in that same way. It's not getting frustrated with ourselves or beating ourselves up. We just like keep bringing the attention back. So we just keep, it's like, okay, yeah, the attention goes to like, oh, there's all this pain. Okay, for right now, I'm just going to come back to what's beautiful, though. Right now, in this moment, is beautiful. And that's true. That's true. And let that delight you. And the other thought that I have about this is, like, your pain, like, about the loss of nature itself is beautiful in that it's demonstrating love to me. Like, it's painful because I love the world. That's why it's painful. And so I can also shift my attention to the love that's like underneath the pain of loss. So that could be another way to get yourself back to connecting to what's beautiful and what's good, is seeing that goodness in your own heart and like letting that be the rest of your attention. Thank you. So I see question from Sophia. What could support me as an adult daughter in being able to, sorry, let's move around. As an adult daughter, being able to allow myself happiness even when her mother has been suffering and the mother seems like not letting herself to be happy and not letting the daughter be happy either. The mother seems to have an unconscious belief that the more one suffers, the better person one is, and a constant requirement that our daughters believe and act suffer like her as much as her. Yeah. What comes to mind for me is I'm just like feeling into like how painful that is. And there, I feel like I was trained maybe in a similar way, Sophia, that like, I don't know exactly what the dynamic is here, but somehow I have a belief in me that if I'm not suffering, then like, I don't care or something like that. If I'm not suffering about the pain in the world, like what's wrong with the world or the suffering that other people are experiencing, then I don't actually care. I'm not loving, or I'm not compassionate, or I'm not a good person. Right. So there's some way that that belief got into me. It'd be fascinating to kind of look at the whole religious cultural conditioning that might have led to that. But I think in this situation, it's just a dynamic that you might have to like, it's like, again, this like, see it clearly for what it is, decide for yourself, is that where you want, what you want to cultivate? And if it's not, then you practicing, like you bring your mind back to the joy, recognizing what's good, delighting in what's beautiful and good, delighting what's beautiful and good in your mom, delighting in what's beautiful and good in yourself. Like that is all that you can do. You know, we often talk about instead of being a Buddhist, be the Buddha. And so this would be one of those moments. It's like, you might not be able to change your mother, especially if you're an adult and she's an older adult. Like we really condition our minds moment by moment. And so there might be a strong habit there, but you can still decide to make a practice of doing it differently in your own. And who knows what kind of impact that would have on your mother over time. So though I'm not suggesting that's easy. I wish you luck with it. And so Rachel's asking, how do we begin to cultivate wishing joy for a person who has hurt us or appears to want to create destruction for others? Acknowledge the hurt and other difficult emotions, and I can wish them joy, but I am wondering whether I am being false and dishonest to myself in some way. Yes. These are just awesome questions. Thank you, Rachel. So the first thing with all of the Brahma Viharas, loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity, that we always start with the easiest being. And for each category, there's a different easiest being. The easiest being for joy is a happy being that you are naturally happy about. So that's the easiest being. We always start with the easiest being. We do that because what we're cultivating is the quality of mind, is like, is the quality of mudita. And the quality of mudita at the joy is the same, whether it's basically the same, whether it's for the easy person or the difficult person. So we cultivate that mudita with the easy person. And then when that feels pretty strong and stable, then we move on to the benefactor. Then we move on to the friend. Then we move on to the difficult person. So, you know, you could make that a path of practice that was like a year long, just with mudita, like day by day, building this capacity until you get to like the difficult person. So I just want to really share that. It's like, it's literally to kind of we all want to do that because it's painful to hate people, right? It's painful to feel jealousy. It's painful to feel envy. So it's natural that I want those feelings to go away. I want to feel joy and love unconditionally for everyone. But it really is like we build the capacity, just like going to the gym. We don't like or running, you know, just start running a marathon. It's like you start running a mile and then slowly, slowly, slowly you build up the strength and capacity. So really think about the joy practice in that way and let it grow. And I think if we haven't let it grow naturally, then we can have this experience of it feeling kind of false or dishonest in some way. So that's my recommendation for that, Rachel. And I celebrate and honor your quality of mind that wants to do that. Okay, the next question. I generally know what brings joy to me. Sometimes, even though I know what I would need to bring joy to my day in the moment, or generally what would enhance my health and well-being, I just can't find the motivation to do it. How can I train my mind to cooperate, to overcome that moment of, ugh, I really don't want to do this right now? Yeah. First thing that comes to mind for me is like wise friends or accountability buddies. I use that term, accountability buddies. So basically people that like relying on other people to help you in those moments. That's what I need. Like just for example, like going outside. I have two friends that we like get on the phone at 7 a.m, 8 a.m, and we go for a walk or jog. And I probably wouldn't do it without them, even though it brings me so much joy. So for me, that's the what I need. I need support. I need more support from like generally humans in my life. And then now that like I have that pattern, it's easier for me to do that thing. Right. But I need some support from other people. So I just wonder if you could figure out ways to build some support or accountability in your life to do those things that you want to feel more happiness around that will bring you more joy. Step one. Step two, when you do step over the ugh, I don't want to do this, really reflect, like let yourself feel the joy and happiness of like it's that positive reinforcement. So really let yourself feel the goodness whenever you do take the step to feel joy. And the more you do that, the more your mind is going to incline towards stepping over the ugh feeling. Yeah. Okay. And so this one's asking for the transcendent origination text. Yeah. I guess maybe, Kara, you could put in... It's in the blog that I wrote on the, there's a blog on the Sangha Live that has a link to Sutta Central, that has a link to the Sutta on transcendent origination, transcendental origination. Yeah, great. So Carl will put it in there. So I'm wondering if anyone, any other questions or anyone want to talk about anything. We have about 7 minutes left. Yay, thank you. And Charles Lee just put it in there too, into the chat, transcendental dependent origination. So there's two, what you'll see right now is like two different translations. Yeah, so if nobody has any questions, I'm wondering maybe you'd be up for sharing joys. Like if you would be willing in the chat just to share the joy, some delight in your life or joy, like whatever came to mind. So that we can all practice mudita, delight in your. Good fortune. And also, as you do this, if there's anything like, one thing that's really lovely about some of these delights is like you can be really specific, you know? Yeah, contemplating joy to other people. Thank you. Oh, I love this. It's like a joy stream. Grass, two new baby cows. Yeah. So nice. Oh my goodness. Holding a hummingbird. Watching your dog off leash. Totally. Fresh peas from the garden. Good for you. You already have peas wherever you are. Scent of lemon balm and thyme. Chicken stew with dumplings. Birds returning from the south. Hugs from kindergartners and children. Two fig tea leaves. And so many people helping with the move. Oh, seeing your parents, yeah. Let's see if I can show you. I described my joy from yesterday. See if you can see this picture. This is me and Kavi. Probably spontaneously holding my hand as we walk to the street. Sweet. So I think we're getting there. Maybe people will continue to share some joys and cars or anything that we, here, I'll show you one more. This is me and Kavi running down the path together. And he has his little tutu on. We're kind of matching. That was sweet too. Okay, so yeah, so you can see in the chat, that's my website. And, I don't really have any things coming up soon, but you can join my newsletter and I'll send some things when I have things happening. And then Inward Bound Mindfulness Education, that's the website. If you have a teenager in your life or in your world, IBME offers lots of programs for teenagers. And a lot of them are online right now, so they are more available. And we're trying to have an in-person retreat in Massachusetts this summer that I'll be teaching. So, you could send a team to that. That'll be in July, in Massachusetts. And then also, there's an IBME UK. If you look up IBME.uk.co, I think it is. It's a partnership in the UK. So, you can, it seems like a lot of folks are in the UK or across the pond. So, if you have teens, yeah, Kareem, thank you. So, check out IBME.org.uk. And they have all sorts of online programs going, amazing things happening. So please, and I believe for both of us, we really have a commitment to accessibility. So it's based on the ability to pay. So that's not a factor for people not coming. Yeah. So wonderful, really, really wonderful to be with you all. Thank you so much for your practice. I'm taking joy in it. May it result in your happiness, your freedom, and the happiness and freedom of all beings everywhere. Thank you.